Y'all ready for this?
Okay.
New theme song, anyone? Oh, hey there. I'm Louis Vertel, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, really, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell. Hi.
Hello, hello.
Burr. Winter. We need to stylize your name more. I feel bad about that.
I'm open to all suggestions.
Okay, well, we're going to work on it.
Okay, just don't say I'm coming.
I stopped myself. Did you see?
You will know it when I am.
Film critic Alonzo Duralde.
Hello.
Alonzo, you're getting screeners now for your job. Is this an exciting part of your for you or no?
It is, because there's always some things that I missed early on, and ultimately, you know, some people I know who are not in the industry are very excited about these screeners happening. Not that I'm giving them to them or anything, because that would be wrong.
It's impossible.
Illegal.
Right. No. You can't.
All I'm saying is I, Tanya, is mine after you have it.
And we also have pop culture scholar Karen Tongson.
Hi, Louis. Hey, Rocketeers.
Oh, God. You really put me in the mood to gab. Coming up in this week's show, we're talking...
Paul just came out of your shirt and just...
Took you over.
I should say,
Paul Lind is on my shirt today.
So it's like
and your heart.
And yes. Your heart. It's like ghost.
He's literally positioned over my heart,
too.
So it's frightening. Coming up in this week's show, we're talking biopics. Plus, we'll be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention. We're going to start way over there with Alonzo.
Well, I'm about two-thirds of the way through, but I feel like I can confidently say that I'm all about season 4 of BoJack Horseman.
Oh.
Netflix. That show just keeps finding new and interesting ways to not only kind of brilliantly satirize the show business, the whole episode where there's this constant spate of mass shootings that are always taking place in locations that were being used as shooting locations in a new movie that have to keep getting cut out, and the sort of knee-jerk way that everybody says thoughts and prayers every time that it happens is brilliantly satirical. But as far as a show about a complicated protagonist with unresolved mental health issues, that cartoon horse is right up there with Don Draper and Walter White as far as I'm
concerned. Amazing.
Yeah.
I would describe that show as my most embarrassing current pop culture blind spot. Can I tell you my problem with it? Everybody is so obsessed with it, I'm afraid it's going to replace the favorites I worked very hard
yes.
to have. Like, don't take away 30 Rock from me.
Oh, over-loving can definitely turn off a show or a movie if too many people have piled onto it. So,
right.
I apologize for being part of the problem.
Yes. But, and Rick and or Morty, I don't know who you are.
I really don't know who you
me
are.
Me neither.
I can't
Why
know.
I know?
Right.
But I've seen episodes after episode after episode, and every time I'm like, who's Rick? Who's Morty?
Right.
Because Morty should look like a Rick, and Rick looks like a Morty.
To me, they're Rizzoli and Niles. I can't know. I can't know who's who, but they might be in season 90.
We always knew who was Cagney and who was Lacey.
Exactly.
Right.
The drunk and the mom.
Right. Forever and ever.
Forever.
Time. Hey, Karen, what are you hot for?
I'm not sure if I'm hot for it, although it talks a lot about being hot for things excessively, and it's season 4 of Transparent, which I realize that people are having a lot of mixed reactions to
right,
it.
Right, the Metacritic score is pretty low for that show.
It's pretty low for the show. I think that, and from what I've seen buzzing around in my social media universe, people are complaining about, like, they're like, is this show still just about terrible people? You know, it is like plunging into one of many Lisa Cholodenko films where nobody's really likable. But, you know, I think that I sort of felt that way. The first episode didn't really entice me very much, but I kind of kept going because, you know, the little thingy on my Amazon wheel just kept going. And soon enough, I was really kind of lured back into the real subtlety and complexity with which the show skewers these really horrifically selfish, narcissistic people, all of them each atomized in their own way.
The pa-fucking pa-feffermans.
The pa-fucking pa-feffermans. But also, I mean, it takes on really complex issues with some subtlety. Like, this season, the Feffermans go to Israel. And,
Bab.
Yeah, and they have to start grappling with, at least particularly Allie starts grappling with the whole Israel-Palestine issue, the two-state solution, the, you know,
apartheid.
Apartheid, and she ends up, you know, hooking up with some sexy social media star while they're there in the region, and she goes to Ramallah and, like, hangs out with
a bunch
of...
Do they actually go there, or is this, like, the back lot of Universal?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I was asking around, and I didn't get to confirm before I arrived here tonight. I do know the Dead Sea was a backlot at Universal, so but I'm not sure about the rest of it, in part because there's so much talk about boycott, divestment, sanctions in the show itself that I'm wondering how they negotiated that politically as a production.
Yeah.
I think there might be a wailing wall on the other side of the Harry Potter land.
Yes, right.
I'm not sure.
It's just Potter land.
It's just next to the Bubba Gump at Universal.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but the one thing that I really, also the one thing that I really appreciated about it is that a running motif this season involves the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack, which I find also really kind of fitting, but also ironic, you know, given they're so Jewish.
Right. Yeah. Okay, now I'm definitely in. I was going to get to this, but now it's moving up the list.
So I think it's worth moving through that first episode and then plunging into the deeper stuff as you get. I'm about halfway through, and it's heating up.
Winter, what's up with you?
Where do I start? Really quick, just like speed round, Broad City this season, terrible. Wow. Can't even understand it. Don't understand. Ooh, don't know where it's going. Really would love to know. Difficult People. I know you didn't like last week's episode. Loved it.
Yeah.
It was great.
I like this season.
I like the season better than I usually did.
Yeah.
But I'm really all about Gaga 5'2".
Yeah.
God, I loved that movie. The documentary.
On the fence. We'll talk about this.
Okay.
Why did you love it?
I loved it because I'm putting it up against, as someone who was born in 1980 and who had Truth or Dare, and then, you know, a litany of other, you know, efforts. You've got, you know, Jay-Z's backstage going into, you know, Blackout, which was his, you know, supposed to be his final album. And then you kind of go all the way to, like, Katy Perry, Piece of Me. As it goes for I'm a musician, I'm a huge worldwide well-known pop star, rock star, whatever.
Phenomenon.
It was phenomenon. It was much more insightful than I anticipated that it would be. I don't like a lot of performance. I like a lot more like, this is what I'm going through. This is my mindset. This is how I do what I do, because I feel like it's important for people who are considered, you know, whatever, maybe by the alt-right, whatever. Like, you know, I want to know your thought process. I want to know, like, what it takes for you to make a song, who you are hanging around with, who do you consider your confidants, how do you get through a day? Because we all seem to think that it's just, like, pop music. And, yeah, it could be flippant and bullshit, but it could also be something that's, like, you really, you're an artist. And, you know, what I got from Jay-Z with his documentaries was the evolution of an artist. And what I got from Gaga is not knowing anything about her other than what I've seen from interviews or what she's talked about during interviews when she's promoting. I saw somebody who's really having like an existential crisis, and she's powering through it with her art.
I think that's true. I think the thing that's weird about that movie is it's a lot about her making her most recent album, Joanne.
Sure.
And the weird thing is, that album is not a hit, and it's not even really critically well received.
No.
But she keeps telling us that the music is like the most vulnerable for her, and to me, it feels like the frontiest of her music because it's such. It's like it's kind of affected the country thing. Like I feel like it would have been an awesome album for Pink to do. You know, you know. But
I don't like the album at all.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of
it. Joanne. That song, like, I was sobbing when she was playing it for her grandmother.
Yeah,
and
she does break down a lot in the movie too, which I found both cool and also like. Are you loving breaking down in front of the camera?
No, you know who loved breaking down in front of the camera? Katy Perry.
No, that I agree with.
Definitely. She just loved, you know, the whole thing. But Gaga, I feel like I felt her connection to her family. I feel like the Italian father, the Catholicism, I felt like that is important to her. It feels important to her. It didn't feel like a front. Especially going from so high intensity with like all of the costumes. When they show that montage where she's just like costume after ridiculous costume.
And mobbed all the time.
And mobbed all the time. And now she's pulling up in like a 70s Mercedes Benz and like wearing like, I don't know, Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, scale. You know? Plus scales.
Plus scale. You know what I mean? Like I just feel like I understand her better. I understand her as an artist because I didn't really care anymore because it was so pomp and circumstance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like, oh, she has the ability to bring it down a notch. And I actually feel like if she'd actually done this doc before the album came out, probably would have done better.
Totally. I agree. You know? I will say the X factor about Truth or Dare for me is that Madonna revealed herself to be not just hilarious, but mean and hilarious.
Mean as fuck. Kevin Costner.
Right.
I will never get over that. Like, have they seen each other since?
No,
like,
of course not.
Of course not.
He called her neat. She called him neat,
neat,
right?
Yes. Right.
Whereas in this movie, like, you don't get that kind of surprise personality reveal, but
right.
it is insightful about her, how she makes music,
I think.
I think that's definitely true.
Was it colored for you at all, the fact that it dropped last Friday on Netflix right as she was canceling her European tour and, like, talking about exhaustion and stuff?
I mean, it because of the chronic pain issue and everybody's dealing, I really actually think it's very – because back in the day, you weren't supposed to talk about the fact that you are injured.
Yeah.
Like, when I worked at Us Weekly, like, at least two actresses I won't name literally called the magazine and said, don't fucking say I'm pregnant. Don't say I fell down a hill because I have a film. I'm negotiating a film and I will lose the money. But now that everything's so – out there, and I'll tell you who it is offline, Alonzo. You just look so scared
about
it.
I will tell you who it is.
No, I can see him wringing his hands in disgust.
What I love is that you're back in the day is like the early 21st century, and I'm thinking about like Valley of the Dolls.
Right, of course, but I'm thinking like, you know, Cameron Diaz era, like I need this, you know, Charlie's Angels 2 money
for real.
But yeah, I mean, I'm curious all the time in this era what it's like. Like, if Selena Gomez did this, I'd be totally into it. If Justin Bieber did it, I'd probably be into it. If Kanye West did it, I would literally be the first person in line. I want people to be more honest about their bullshit. We need it right now more than ever. Just be like, I'm honest. I'll just be honest about your bullshit.
I concur, and I just want to say I'm laughing that maybe Alonzo thought he was going to get a big reveal about Brenda Vaccaro or something. Is she okay?
What
is she hiding?
My jam is significantly less cooler than yours. It is 73 questions with Tracee Ellis Ross. Are we familiar with the 73 questions format?
Yes, of course.
Okay, very quickly, what it is Vogue does a YouTube feature where they take a cameraman, they go into a celebrity's house and ask the celebrity 73 questions as they walk backwards through their amazing property.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So, and they've had people like
Sarah Jessica Parker,
Nicole Kidman, and it gets like real model, they'll have like Lupita Nyong'o, but they'll have Emily Ratajkowski and people like that, which is like they never get fascinating.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
And Rata going through her studio apartment in downtown was just hurting me.
It was weird.
Did you go back and forth to cover all 73?
Just back and forth from the kitchen island to the mini fridge.
I have to watch that shit now.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It is generally, when it's a good, it's fascinating. The best moment ever in 73 Questions is when Nicole Kidman is asked, how are you feeling right now? And she's on her like alpaca farm in Australia. It's zany. And she goes, honestly, a little raw. And you know what? I believed her.
The funniest thing ever, my friend Gary, during the screening of the movie where she has amnesia and every day and she lives with Colin Firth, at one point he just said, I'm Nicole Kidman and I've made of whispers and glass.
Oh, Nicole. But okay, the newest edition features Tracee Ellis Ross, who I became super into her when she was hosting the BET Awards with Anthony Anderson. She's, like, perfect for that. I love when we find perfect hosts for things. I talked about before how we don't have game show hosts anymore. People who are awesome MCs are great.
Yeah.
Okay, so she does this episode, and they rarely just have people who are super funny on, right? Well, okay, the question she gets, they're like, who's your style icon, Tracee Ellis Ross? She goes, me in 17 years, I have hope. Just like, it's real, like, I'm the best.
Yeah.
Also, there's always like a weird Dada element to like what you end up seeing in the house. Like, there'll be some guest who's supposed to be there or who you're supposed to believe just happens to be there, but it's totally set up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, her half brother or stepbrother, Evan Ross, is there with his wife, Winter. Who is it?
It's Ashley Simpson.
Ashley Simpson is there.
I did not recognize her in that video.
Yes.
She is so much blonder, even. I never knew that could happen.
She's like deeply shocked, like gem blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so we were just going through the place with Tracee Ellis Ross, and she just reveals herself to be like, both funny and actually able to be candid, which people on this feature are never able to do, even though that's the whole point of it. Like, weirdly, this is supposed to be a let your hair down moment, but it actually reveals who was a good actress.
Yeah. Mm.
So she is able to be like, I'm relatable and also real funny. And also like, oh, here comes a joke about how Trump should be impeached. And also she like plays with a bunch of notes of I'm awesome, and they're all awesome. Mm-hmm. So I recommend that episode more than any of them that have been out recently. Guys, in the Taylor Swift one, the reveal is that she likes chicken tenders. That's what I'm talking about.
Stop the
even
presses.
Bringing that up is assaulting me.
I bet you she likes honey mustard, too.
No, right.
Who's
sometimes.
Your other favorite? We have to do a
she's
round
so
table.
Relatable.
Who's your favorite beyond just this one?
I would say I think the first one they ever did was Sarah Jessica Parker, and I think hers is amazing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's another person who's just like, I'm sitting down and I'm a little winded, but sure, I'd love to talk about my books.
Yeah, she couldn't wait to get him out of the house.
It's a weirdly, I'm going to call it essential viewing for before you go out on a Saturday night.
100%.
Literally, my friends and I sit there and watch it, and like we'll go back to like Victoria Beckham being like, they ask Victoria Beckham, what are you passionate about? And she's like over her shoulder walking through whatever store she owns, and she goes, AIDS.
Now we're just gonna go home and watch.
If that's not passion,
I have a new ringtone.
Yes.
No.
You throw yourself at the TV.
About that.
No, you like fall down. You can't watch it.
Amy Adams doing ballet.
Oh, no. See, when things like that happen, it's like, no, don't tell me you're an artist in a new way. I can't handle
it. She was trying to get a new Black Swan or Aronofsky film. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. Right. And, I mean, God willing, I want her to get, like, 3 more Oscar nominations before
100%.
She wins. 100%. So, yeah, I want it to be painful for her. Hey, guys, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about biopics. How many of us have spent our weekends in pants that constrict our legs or worse, in ill-fitting cargo shorts? Those days are over. Slip into something a little more comfortable and stylish by slipping on a fresh pair of Chubbies shorts. The fabric has the right amount of stretch and gives you a great range of motion. Their designs are unlike anything you've ever seen. And also the colors are adorbs, which I can't say for shorts most of the time. Chubbies are dedicated to making shorts so comfortable you're going to wish you could wear them all the time. So go to chubbies.com/rocket today to get free 2-day shipping on your order. That's Chubbies, chubbies.com/rocket to get your Chubbies in just 2 business days. Chubbies.com/rocket.
There is a new series of Star Trek coming out, and MaximumFun.org has submitted to our blackmail and agreed to host a new show on the network. We're calling it The Greatest Discovery.
We've got photographs. We have recordings. We have web browser history on everyone at Maximum Fun. Those are the things that have allowed us to have a second Star Trek show on Maximum Fun.
There's no way they're happy about this, but we will be recapping every episode of Star Trek Discovery, all 15 of them as they come out over the fall and winter. And we hope you'll join us by going to MaximumFun.org and looking for The Greatest Discovery, or looking for it wherever you download podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Louis Vertel. With me in the studio,
Alonzo Duraldi,
Winter Mitchell,
and Karen Tongson.
And
AIDS.
That's right. AIDS made a very important cameo. But before we get into biopics, I just want to remind you that Jumbotrons are open for Pop Rocket. Have your message read by us. Go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron for more info. All right. First of all, rudimentary question for everybody just about this topic. Guys, how do you say the word biopic? Winter, you go first.
Well, I said when Alan asked me what we're talking about this week, I said biopics. And he's like, what? And I said biopics. And he said, what? So I ain't got nothing.
Okay. Inconclusive findings.
Yes.
I'm a believer in biopics since it's short for a biographical picture.
Precisely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know. I believe biopics. Karen, don't disagree with me.
I believe biopics too. I hate it when people say biopic.
No, it seems like...
Because I'm myopic and I just think it's a slur.
Exactly.
Yes.
Biopic sounds like a new sexuality.
Yeah.
No, also it's like bio is the key part of the word.
Sure.
Like I need to hear that.
Sure.
So.
Exactly.
Okay, well that's done. Actually, we're done. No.
That's all we have to say.
Okay, so... we're bringing up this topic this week because specifically there are 3 coming out that are probably going to be Oscar contenders. Battle of the Sexes, which is the movie about Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs in there. Battle of the Sexes in 1973. Mm-hmm. And of Bobby Riggs' match against Margaret Court a few months before. We also have Victoria and Abdul, which is the new Judi Dench movie where she gets real denchy. You can just tell.
The denchiest ever.
Deep Dench.
Yes,
deep
right. Dench. And also Goodbye Christopher Robin, which is about A.A. Milne being a lame father to the real Christopher Robin, and hopefully about why Tigger is annoying but real. So I guess my first question about this topic is, we get so many of these every year, and specifically, we've gotten a ton of them in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Why are they usually boring? Why?
Well, I think because so many of them are made as such awards bait,
yeah,
that they all play it safe to a certain extent, and they're all... I think there's a kind of shitty writing you can get away with in a biopic that you can't get away with in a normal movie because they're passing it off as, oh, no, this really happened. And they really right. have this conversation, even though if you put it in a fictional film, you would just roll your eyes at how bullshitty it is. And so I find, like, the ones that I've liked a lot in recent years have been ones that a lot of times didn't even make money because people just didn't know what to make of them. Like, I'm a big fan of Get On Up.
Oh, sure.
That was really good.
Yeah, I loved that. And I was not a fan of anything Tate Taylor did before or after that movie, but I liked how out of order it was, mm-hmm. and how, you know, we weren't made to love him, mm-hmm. that James Brown was like abusive and fucked up and all these things, and I prefer that. But I think there's this sort of Harvey Weinstein brand of biopic that we've been getting so much in the last few years. Your Imitation Games, your Theories of Everything, your mm-hmm. your King's Speeches, you know.
I think that's almost an essential component of making them work, is making us not like them sometimes.
Yeah.
Because if you like them the whole time, it's like, well, then this is just a product for them. You know what I mean? Like, I could have guessed I was getting this before I, you know, watched it.
Then it just becomes some sort of star vehicle, really.
Yeah.
You know, what you were saying about the 73 questions, when I just don't want to know that you have another talent. Like, it often becomes a showcase for somebody else's, you know, hey, guess what? I know how to sing.
Yeah, party or, trick. Know,
like, exactly. And so... to me, they often end up being built around showcasing somebody's half-baked other skill.
Right.
And that's what makes them unendurable.
What's interesting also, though, is like in the case of this Billie Jean King movie, like Emma Stone would never have been my first choice to play her, but also mm-hmm. would the movie have not been made otherwise? You know, it's mm-hmm. like I want to be critical about her as Billie Jean King for a couple of reasons. Well, she's actually great in the movie. I think it's a mm-hmm. really good performance. But like the face is not the same. Which, okay, fine. Here's what I have to say about this movie. There is an extended sequence in which she gets a haircut, and it's her DL, basically girlfriend, gives her the haircut, and they're talking and talking, and finally she emerges with her new haircut in time for the match. You'd think they would have given her the real haircut Billie Jean King had,
right.
but instead they give her this Marcy from Peanuts thing, which
the
she
Marcy
never
Shack.
Had.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's a fear of mullet happening.
Yeah,
here, for
right.
sure.
No, here's what you need to know about the year a couple years after 1975. Robert Redford and Martina Navratilova had the same haircut. Okay,
yeah.
They had the same silhouette.
Yeah,
it was a puffy hair time.
Yeah.
So I'm mad that they got that wrong.
Especially if the hairdresser being a key character does not. All the less reason to excuse it.
Right, yes.
One of the things that I noticed when I was watching All Eyes on Me, which was just really, really bad, it had all the it was the Tupac
right.
biopic.
Yeah.
It had all the makings of a different way of telling a story we've heard a lot. But it just bummed me the fuck out. And it felt like a very long Lifetime movie. And that's the one thing I always get mad at Lifetime about. Like, they can research down to the bone, you know, Jodi Arias, because they have probably court filing or whatever they have. Or they can read stuff, read news, they can watch Nancy Grace. But they can't get things that everybody knows happened right.
Yeah.
We know this happened. You know, like the Britney Spears movie. It's like we know she was here when this happened, or this is the conversation you happened. I'm just really, really tired of people just doing stuff for entertainment value and not just sticking the facts. Just stick to the facts.
That's what I really hated about that 1989 Carpenters movie.
It was Cynthia Gibb. Oh.
Yeah,
yes.
With Cynthia. Because the name of the guy, they changed the name of the guy who she married.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Richard apparently got co-directing credit in it. And so, like, they manufactured a lot of different details, including the degrees of care and concern that members of her own family
Nothing
had.
Fucks up a biopic like living people.
Yeah.
Like Charlie Wilson's War. I remember, like, he was alive and whoever Julia Roberts was playing was alive. And you could tell in the way the movie was done, like, if these two didn't have, like, their mitts all over this thing, we'd be getting a much sharper and darker story. But then on the other hand, you have a movie like American Splendor, which is a movie that I adore, where the actual Harvey Pekar literally kind of wanders in and out of the movie at various points to make observations about things. And it actually sort of makes the rest of the movie feel truer having him there, because seeing real Harvey next to Paul Giamatti, just like completely, you know, schlubbed up to the max to play him, you know, you buy it. And it almost feels like you're getting this sort of seal of approval from somebody who has always been happy in his own work to portray himself without rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
But when have we ever seen a situation like The Social Network where somebody has seen a depiction of themselves and done... I mean, Mark Zuckerberg has done a tremendous amount of just changing his entire narrative to buck whatever he's wrought. Like, basically, the way he is portrayed in the movie is what we assume. I mean, it became like the prototype for every guy we think works in Silicon Valley.
Right.
And some guys don't do him any favors by being that person. But he's done like a magnificent job, whether or not, however, whatever you feel about Facebook or his dreams of presidency, he's done a magnificent job of sort of like looking at that person going, eh, I kind of sucked. And trying to sort of change that. Like, not a lot of people get that opportunity.
Now he wants to be Bill and Melinda Gates.
100%. Right.
Well, that's also an interesting case because...
movie I don't want to see.
While I think the movie does make him look, you know, like some socially inept, you know, meanly competitive but super smart person, it's like, it also is apparently a caricature to me. Like, nobody could be that monotone, like, talking. He literally talks like the robot in, like, Her,
no,
into that, you know?
That's who he is.
But,
that's
like, no, but
crazy.
Even in interviews, he's not that monotone, I don't think.
I just don't like how he doesn't know how to, like, look at people. Like, when I look, like, I'm looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
But he looks at people like, you know, like a Stepford Wife. Like,
right.
His entire upper body, like a Ken doll, moves at the waist. And nothing else does that. So I think he's slowly becoming a person.
This points out, though, that like the biopics that immediately came to mind when I was thinking about which ones rule or that I even ever think about are ones where they're like terrible people, because then like you don't get the feeling that, you know, that a Richard Carpenter is lingering behind the lens. Like,
who
you know,
knew he was a piece of shit? Jeez.
Right. I mean, like, when you think about how all their music is about control in the end, it does make sense.
You're right.
But like, I think one of my favorites of all time is Monster, because it's like,
yes.
You
oh,
begin
yeah.
with some sympathies towards Eileen Wuornos because she's a strange person anyway, and then where the story goes is so unpredictable, and Christina Ricci is also so good in that movie, that it's like an unforgettable experience. I'm like, wow, that was a real person, and I'm blown away by what the reality was.
I just think she's playing, I'm sorry, but now that I've watched that movie and as many times as I have, she just seems to me like she's playing Michael Keaton playing Beetlejuice the entire time.
Oh, shit. Oh my God.
You ruined it now.
What?
Because I was just, you know.
When she's like, when she's in the restaurant, she's like, okay.
We're fixing up.
Fix my heart. You know.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
No, wait. Are you suggesting that Aileen Wuornos is not Beetlejuice? Because
I mean, the job interview scene kills me every fucking
Which
time.
Of the Steve Jobs, speaking of Jobs,
yes.
do we all prefer?
Oh,
have
God.
We seen any of them?
I saw both of them. Yeah. Well, actually, all three if we count Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Oh, dear God.
Can we
yeah.
count that? I guess we do.
Yeah,
I
think TBS, I want to say.
Oh,
actually,
maybe
TNT.
It was TBS.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I had to sit through one of those performances again, I might actually go with... what's this with Noah
Don't
Wiley?
Say, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was gonna say she said Kutcher.
I thought. You
oh
were
no,
Kutcher.
That's the bottom of the barrel.
I thought Steve Jobs was terrible.
Steve, I liked. I liked
not the Michael Fassbender.
I like Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs.
Okay, kind of. Except her, every one of her lines was, "You're an asshole, Steve, but we love you."
Yes.
Pretty
yes.
much. Yeah. Well, that was. I think she wrote that down on a card. That was going to be her secret.
Yeah.
And that's what comes out in the performance
wow.
and in the script. Heaven knows.
I didn't realize she was such a Stanislavski devotee. Meisner. I don't know. No, but I thought the craziest thing about that movie was the assumption that we would think the lead up to a PowerPoint presentation would be fascinating. Three times?
Yes. Four or five times, I think. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's three acts, though, isn't it, essentially?
Yeah.
Lead ups to the behind the scenes before the PowerPoint presentation.
He just narrowed it down to a lead up to a PowerPoint presentation.
It is funny, though, to see multiple biopics about the same person because
all
you
come out like within 12 months of each other.
Yeah, well, exactly. We have like Dueling Capotes and stuff. But like I've bought and I have it sitting in my Amazon queue, but I haven't watched it yet. When Billy Beat Bobby, which was the HBO movie about this very same thing, directed by actual lesbian Jane Anderson, who I imagine gets that part of the story maybe a little better. And Holly Hunter probably looks less like Billie Jean King than Emma Stone does.
Yeah.
But I bet she acts the shit out of it so much by the end of it, you just
know
can't
it.
Tell
we
them
already
apart.
Know. You don't even see it. Yeah.
I do have to say, though, that I at some point I just forgot it was Emma Stone.
Yeah.
Like performing.
There goes her Oscar nod. I never
stopped watching her. I never stopped watching Steve Carell. Like, they didn't have that Michael Douglas becomes Liberace moment for me where I wasn't seeing the actor.
Oh,
anymore.
You see. I mean, but I think that might be a particular susceptibility I have to biopics, sport-related biopics. Mm. Because I'm so sucked into the actual narrative of the competition. And, like, you know, if I know about, like, the sporting event or occasion or figure who they're documenting in the film, then, you know, I'm like eager to get to that next part of the story, and I'm propelled as much by my knowledge of what happens. And then I do think that all of that falls away and is driven entirely by like plot, competition, and narrative. So that's why I think that I'm more prone and more susceptible to sporting movies, even if, you know, the actor playing Prefontaine or whatever looks nothing like him.
Jared Leto.
That was another twofer.
Yeah. I know. There's so much. It's true that these come up in cycles, right?
But we've never had anything like the, was it Five Nights of the Jacksons?
Oh, right. Was that on VH1?
It was ABC.
Yeah.
It was,
it just aired on VH1 forever after.
In perpetuity. You know, that is one of the last TV movies that really just captured a nation, because everything that the Jacksons did up until that point captured attention. And then to have like three nights where you go from literally their meager beginnings all the way to, I don't know, I forget now at this point how deep they got. I think they got as far
as the victory tour. I never saw it.
Choreographed by Paul Abdul.
They got to him catching on fire. So that
was
close.
Okay, they did. They did Pepsi for sure.
They did Pepsi for sure. So like, I just feel like it all depends on how much. It doesn't matter about the access per se. It's about relationships, as I've determined. It's come down to relationships. Like you were saying earlier, Karen, like, you know, somebody's point of view is different than somebody else's point of view. But if you have people saying 100%, the estate saying we will not participate in this, then you're going to find yourself a paltry, meager, bullshit, no music rights having.
Yeah. Well, that's why I miss like the sort of tacky Mad Libs biopics where they didn't get the rights to anything and they just sort of changed the names just enough to not get sued.
Yeah.
Like, the Romana Clay.
Exactly. There was a 70s movie called The Greek Tycoon where
Jacqueline Bisset
plays the widow of a president who marries a very rich Greek guy, but it's not about Jackie Kennedy.
Oh,
don't
wow.
sue us, please.
Well, also, that's interesting that you bring up music biopics, because I feel like what's so weird about them usually is the whole point of them is you're getting into the iconography of somebody and why the specificity of that star is exciting and important, whatever. But of course, it's not the actual music star.
Right.
So it's like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
You know what
like
I mean?
Like, when you do, like, Lifetime, I really want to talk to their programming directors, like, our head of development, like, what are you doing? You're not getting access to her music.
Yeah.
Britney, Whitney, whomever else you're doing, Brandy, whomever you can call on. And then you're still
Willa Ford coming
Willa
up.
Willa Ford.
Yeah. They'll go
That's
right through
like
it.
That's like literally an intro and an outro. And back ending a commercial. I just don't. Like, we were talking about movies we want to see. Like, I want to see the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to know. Yeah. Like, we've only heard about what's gone on between them. I want to know.
It wasn't Lifetime's sort of stated purpose that they make these things to be hate watch? I mean, didn't it all start with the Liz and Dick with Lindsay Lohan? And they're like, oh, people, like, everybody was live tweeting how terrible that was. They were like, mm-hmm. Goldmine,
right.
Let's do shitty biopics of famous people and do it just wrong enough to where, like, we'll be a laughing stock, but they'll all be watching.
It's just not fair.
So they're punking everyone and making it camp.
They're gaslighting
it's the Sharknado of
totally.
Like biopics, basically.
speaking of musical groups that have got to have a biopic, yeah. How do we not have Fleetwood Mac yet?
Oh,
yeah.
Especially since a few years ago, there was supposed to be a biopic of Dennis Wilson, which I believe was supposed to be Dennis Quaid. No, that's not right. Anyway, oh, no, it was, who's the guy? Aaron Eckhart. It was supposed to be him.
Huh. Oh.
And who was going to play Christine McVie, his girlfriend, right when, Vera Farmiga? Ooh. Guys, I haven't stopped thinking about it since. And
what
then they canceled it.
What happened?
Did you follow
that?
The breadcrumb trail?
Or I guess, right, yeah, in the sandbox, etc.
But see, that's one where you could totally, like, okay, we can't get Fleetwood Mac to sign off of it. We just change the names a little bit. We get somebody to write, we get Adam Schlesinger to write some Fleetwood Mac-y 70s sounding song.
Yeah.
But it's a matter
meet
of
good
interest.
Flack.
But it's a matter of interest, right? Like, well, you have situations like Griselda Blanco, who is she was the queen of cocaine in the 70s and 80s, and then she went into jail. She's in Cocaine Cowboys, mm-hmm. too. She is supposed to be portrayed on Lifetime by Catherine Zeta-Jones and on HBO by J-Lo. Mm-hmm. And, wow. You know, I really can't debate both. You know I love you, J-Lo, but, like, I can't. You're both just acting on, you know.
Well, Cece Jones already did Traffic. That's kind of the same thing.
It is kind of the same thing. But it's also like, how much interest is there, depending on the time, depending on what we're talking about, you know, how much interest is there in for, like, I'm curious about a Fleetwood Mac, but I'm almost 40. Is a 22-year-old going to sit there and go see a Fleetwood Mac movie?
I weirdly would say yes, because I weirdly feel like Stevie Nicks has universality for younger people.
Sure,
I can't explain it even. Like, people just like her.
Sure,
I don't know.
It's the many iterations of Landslide
that
people, you know, started feeling deep to for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
they did it on Glee, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's true. They had that whole Fleetwood Mac episode of Glee, so there's at least that touch point. I mean, I'm sure that the only thing that's holding people up is really the music rights at this point, because you really just can't do that movie without it. But I'm wondering what people think, if whether or not we think television is a better or more amenable home for biopics than you know, doing feature films. Because I think that, you know, one of the things, and I don't keep trying to throw it back to Battle of the Sexes on purpose, but, you know, one of my feelings about that when I was going to see it, so we could talk about parts of it today, was like, you know, did this really need to be made for the big screen?
Yeah.
I mean, why, you know, like, did it really need this? It doesn't need this grandiose production situation going on here.
But I needed the Beach Boys miniseries, mm-hmm. which I think was 3 nights too, because mm-hmm. I want the entire story. If we're going to go there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need the time to sprawl out.
Yeah.
Right?
And if you were doing, like, the Billie Jean King biopic, you would need several nights, because the movie is, it's interesting in that I find it sort of tentative about her lesbian awakening, but because it takes place over such a narrow period of time, she's still tentative about her lesbian
awakening.
Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But no, I hear you, like, especially having been an HBO movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what else this one does.
I was just like, we already did one on HBO, so we can't put it on HBO, so I guess we'll release it as a feature.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, and get the Slumdog Millionaire guy to write it. I mean, mm-hmm. I found it, that was a movie that I found charming, but it never was blowing me away, either in the period detail, which was perfectly fine, or in the, like, making a statement about this moment that changed the world. And it's nice. People will enjoy it and have
it's
a good
nice,
time.
But I'd rather watch that on TV for free.
Totally.
Did you like how much of an asshole it made Margaret Court, though?
I love that. Was my favorite part.
That she is for reals a, like, Bible thumping, gay hating,
right, the worst.
Yeah. So I was perfectly happy to see her portrayed as not nice.
And there's some Australian arena named Margaret Court Arena that they want to rename after, like, Yvonne Goolagong or something, because Margaret Court is so awful.
Yes. And it's like, I'm sorry, you don't get to be a homophobe in women.
She's
tennis.
Homophobic. Right. She's transphobic. She's basically said that we should, you know, like, reform all trans children. You know, yes, Goolagong all the way, baby.
Totally.
Yes. No, but what's interesting about not doing a 3-night HBO thing is I actually think the biopics I like most tend to be slivers from people's lives as opposed to the entire life, because,
like, Iron Lady.
Yeah, or like Trumbo comes to mind and
the
stuff.
Queen.
Because it's like these movies feel like Wikipedia entries.
Yeah.
You can actually see the headings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, moving into
early
the controversy
years.
Period. Yes.
Yeah.
Et cetera. So it's like, a movie that I love was like The Queen, where it's just about 1997. You know what I mean? You know, where it's just, I just want that one moment where, like, we can watch Helen Mirren sit there and think, is Tony Blair right?
I mean, part of me agrees with you, but then I'm also like sort of waving the flag for movies like American Splendor and Get On Up, which cover large yeah. periods of time. And I think you can go broader if you have something to say, and if you are making a story where somebody's life isn't just a succession of events, but actually adds up to something or is the accumulation of things. But otherwise, yeah, I think you're right. Maybe a laser focus is better. One thing that makes Get On Up good as a music biopic is not only did they get the James Brown songs, Chadwick Boseman is singing them in the movie himself.
Right. Okay.
You know, and so that gives you a real sort of electricity and immediacy. The worst is, of course, did you see the Jimi Hendrix one with Andre Benjamin?
Where
they got no song clearances, and it's like this sort of vague fake Hendrix music in the background.
Like, and then they just pan to like a lava lamp for 10 minutes.
Essentially, yes.
Distorted guitars and lava lamps.
I have a question. Like, who are you tired of hearing iterations? I hate to say this because I love her, but I don't need any more Marilyn.
Oh, duh.
Oh, for sure.
Well, particularly after that fucking
My Week with Marilyn.
With Eddie Redmayne just gawking at her.
Oh, no.
That was so disgusting.
That was the worst.
I don't need any more.
I took my bra off in the theater while
you did?
I was watching
you
that.
Were
I was so
it.
Tired.
You
I was
were so
done.
Tired. You
that,
were done.
That movie counts as necrophilia.
And then I also feel like, you know, Star 80 is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, love it.
That just doesn't get enough, like, play.
That's a hard sit, though. Like, Eric Roberts is brilliant in that movie, but that is a hard sit because it is so anxiety-creating and painful, and he's so believably creepy.
But oh, I know.
I love that movie, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But I'm just saying, it's not one that you want to pop like, hey, let's watch Star 80.
No. But I think there's so many layers to it, like the Peter Bogdanovich aspect of it, and then how that slips into other shit, because he's a weird fuck,
well,
you know?
Well, he married her sister.
Yeah.
And got her plastic surgery to look more like
Jesus
her.
Christ, what is wrong with him? But there's also, like, so many different other stories that I'm like, dying to hear about, and yet another Diana movie. I love you, Princess Di, but like another Diana movie, like there's like they're just rinsing another Whitney doc.
It's also in particular they pick people like that because going back to Marilyn, it's like we apparently still want her to be something that like an idea
she
of her
60 years ago,
you know, or just I'm just not fascinated with her. There's no we want all, to her to have two dimensions, like innocent seeming and then like subtly wise, but I have to go die now.
Yeah.
Actually, the most recent Whitney doc is pretty fascinating because it's all about how the closet killed her.
Oh, yeah, footage of her. Her name is escaping me.
It's Robin Crawford. Yes, yeah, it's like it's an angle we hadn't seen before.
We didn't talk about Selena.
That's an interesting movie because here's the thing. When you look at all the great biopics, like people usually do something with the voice where they've really learned it. J-Lo, I'm going to just say, sounds like J-Lo in that movie.
She didn't sing it, though. She just lip-synced.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, just talking. I mean,
just
she doesn't. Yeah.
Talking.
Yeah. She doesn't sound Texan.
She sounds like a Texan who grew up on Madonna.
Right.
And that I bought. But the thing
we
about,
were buying J-Lo as much as we were engaging with Selena, I think, with that film, even though I really loved
it. We should talk about timing because like the timing was so soon after Selena died. Like Selena literally died, and then like 6 months later they're like a Selena movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's like capturing the because there's nothing there's no her.
The body was barely cold.
Yes, the body was barely cold, and also her body of work was super thin if you think about it. She's like four or five albums, Selena y Los Niños, and then like her standalone albums. So I guess I'm curious about like how soon before we decide we're just gonna do this.
I mean, it depends. Obviously, there was a clamoring for that movie to happen, and it was a hit, you know, and she had a very fervent audience, and she did die tragically young. And so I think there was an eagerness to sort of readdress the phenomenon of her and to sort of look at what happened. But at the same time, you know, I'm sure that her family had a great deal of say in everything that was in that movie.
Sure.
And I'm always dubious about that in a biopic. I think, you know, I'm kind of like a nice nin. Like, wait till everybody's dead, then open the vault.
Yeah. Right. Also, I mean, that movie is responsible for her probably being maybe even doubly as iconic as she would have been otherwise. You know what I mean? I literally think of stills of that movie before I think of the real Selena when I think about her.
Sid and Nancy's kind of the same way.
Right, yeah. Was that, that would have been a little, like, a few years after they were dead. Or,
A little bit, but not, again, it was
a few years. It was 82, right?
I think they died
in 82 and the movie came out in 84 or 85, 86, I want to say.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, it was still pretty quick. I'm sure a lot of the locations were still standing.
Sure.
Does anybody have complicated feelings about Jackie, by the way? Do you know what bothered me about that movie, quickly?
I don't understand when someone talks this way and trains themselves to talk about the Oval Office in that manner.
You just want to
go
on the
smoking.
Smoking.
What bothered me about that movie were the scenes with the damn reporter who was so mean to her, and they didn't make, even if that happened in real life, they didn't justify it. He was sitting there after, like, JFK's been dead for 15 minutes.
Yeah. She's still covered with blood.
She's still wearing the blood spatter on Halston.
And he's like, tell me about this president. I mean, just like rolling his eyes. Like, and so that she can have these, like, quippy retorts. That's another thing biopics do, is make people way wittier than they were.
100%.
You know, yeah, did you see this year A Quiet Passion with Cynthia Nixon as Emily Dickinson? It's not horrible. But like, they're like, oh, she was just like Dorothy Parker. It's like, no. She wasn't at all.
Not at all.
Now, Lewis, do you know Dash and Lily?
I sure do, with Judy Davis and...
late Sam Shepard.
And Bebe Neuwirth as Dorothy Parker. Yes.
Oh, yes. Directed by Kathy Bates, a movie about the love affair between Lillian Hellman and Dashiell Hammett, which is also portrayed in Julia with Jane Fonda and Jason Robards. That was a made-for-cable film. And, you know, yeah, there are some moments where you can tell the period is a little on a budget. But the two of them are so great. And there's something about playing smart people on film.
I love that. Yes.
You have to be convincing about it. And, like, I totally bought that the two of them would be able to sit down. And, I mean, Shepard obviously is a writer himself, so that helps. But, you know, they would be able to sit down at a typewriter and rattle that stuff out.
No, precisely. And you just brought up Julia with Jane Fonda, which I also have written down here. Yeah. Writers being frustrated and they're women, something that speaks to me. Another movie that I think is great also has Judy Davis. One of my favorite biopics ever is Impromptu, if you've ever seen
that.
Oh, love it.
Yes.
Hugh Grant.
Yes,
as Chopin.
And she's George Sand.
And also, here's the thing. I don't think George Sand probably looked anything like that. No one is more perfect than Judy Davis in that movie with her, like, crazy hair and men's outfits and, like, rancor. And also, like, I have a deadline. And also, I am thirsty for this tubercular man.
But movies about writers are one of the hardest things to do because writing is the least cinematic activity, with the possible exception of Transcendental Meditation.
Yeah.
But one that I love is Henry and June.
Never seen it.
That's such a dirty, dirty movie.
It is.
You are both naming Impromptu and Henry and June are both movies that are, like, building blocks, the Legos to, like, my budding homosexuality when I was younger.
The scene in Henry and June where a nice Nin and her husband go to the brothel and watch the two women have sex with each other.
Yeah.
Like, I had no dog in that hunt and I was sweating.
I was like, what is up with that?
It was so hot.
It was Fred.
Fred Ward
Fred
was
Ward,
as Henry Miller.
Wow. He's so, it's like, so appropriately grody, you know?
But what about Shattered Glass?
I watched that. I had a journalism final.
I love that movie.
In 2004, I was a journalism major. I had a major final, and that was mysteriously on TV the night before I watched it. You know what? It gave me strength, and I did think it was pretty good. And he looked pretty good as
It excuses the existence of Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
Oh, God, poor guy. Like, what's your purpose? I love that movie because it just really shows to me what it was like to be pre, the internet taking over everything journalistic and content creating, and, like, what people were literally going after. It just captures that, like, period where people were just, like, we're getting a story quick and fast, and also still being able to sort of, like, fudge shit.
Because
phone books were still a thing, and dot-coms weren't really a thing yet. It literally shows what it's like pre and post internet to me is like a collision of pre and post internet in a film.
Spotlight is
I was
too.
Just going to say the same thing. That's what's fascinating.
When they're combing through those directories, you're like, oh yeah, directories.
And that was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
There was an AOL billboard in the parking lot. The vultures were circling.
Yeah.
It gets the blandness right of that era too. I mean, one look at Rachel McAdams trousers throughout that movie. And you're like, I can't believe we did this to people in 2003.
It was the Gap's last dying vestige.
Right.
Everybody is in, everybody khaki. What was the tagline? Everybody khaki.
Right.
Khaki. Khaki.
Zoot Suit Riot. Or whatever.
Yeah, Zoot Suit Riot.
Acru, bone, and oatmeal.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. Taking me back. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Griffin McElroy.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
And we've got a new podcast on Maximum Fun called Wonderful.
Wonderful.
It's an enthusiast podcast where we talk about things that we're excited about and things that you're excited about.
Things like overalls.
24-hour Sudafed.
The grand prize game.
The fact that wombats use their butts to kill predators.
The soundtrack to the movie Dick Tracy.
The beach potion we call Bud Light Lime.
All these things and more every Wednesday, and we'll also talk about things that you're excited about.
You can find us on MaximumFun.org or iTunes or wherever. I don't know, just search Wonderful. Google it, you'll probably get there.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Louis Fertel. With me in the studio,
Winter Mitchell,
Alonzo Duraldi,
and Karen Tongson.
Do you know what we do here every week on Pop Rocket? We'll be asking our panel, what's your current jam? We're going to start with Alonzo Duraldi.
Well, I'm building off of Margaret Wappler's All About from last week, although I was already watching it, so it's, I'm not just, you know, blindly following her suggestions, but I'm totally down with The Deuce on HBO, which is featuring a great wall-to-wall soundtrack of period soul and R&B songs. But every week, over the under the opening credits, we are treated to the great Curtis Mayfield's Don't Worry, If There's a Hell Below, We're All Gonna Go. So first of all, you had me at Waka Chica.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for that. But I love just the way that the lyrics play out, the blacks and the crackers, the police and their backers are all political actors. Like, fucking A right, Curtis
that
Mayfield.
That is fabulous. Also, I have to say, terrible show. One thing vinyl did give us was a soundtrack of covers, including Amy Mann doing Yesterday Once More by the Carpenters that I really recommend.
Oh,
Amy Mann's, I don't know if you're obsessed
I
with
love
her. She's
Mann,
like my hero. So anyway, I recommend that.
I love
that.
Her too.
Karen, how about you?
Everyone, we had an anniversary this week. And it's Melissa Etheridge's album, Yes, I Am.
And is she ever.
Turned 24.
Is this?
Meaning, okay. So Yes, I Am turned 24, meaning she's too old for James Woods to date, but just young enough for Melissa to start dating.
That's
again.
That's right.
Oh,
And so here we are, the opening track to the album. You all know it. Winter's already sung some of it. I'm the Only One. I mean, this is Melissa at the height of her swagger.
Mm. Ooh, yes. Yeah,
with
sexy.
Her ripped bootcut jeans.
Yeah.
Her vests without t-shirts on underneath.
Yeah.
And lots of amulets.
Yeah.
You can smell the Bud Light and Marlboro Lights reeking.
Yes. Off of
body.
You know who I suspect was not happy to hear this single the first time? Alana Miles. She's like, I'm done.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Biting my rhyme. Yeah. I love reading old Dykes to Watch Out For cartoons, the Alison Bechdel one, because they always had the one generic singer that everybody loved who would never come out of the closet who was named J.T. Chapridge. So it was like she managed to shade Katie Lang, Tracy Chapman, and Melissa Etheridge in one go.
100%.
And then eventually they finally all came out anyway.
Exactly.
Tracy Chapman, Ellis Walker, one of the greatest couples of all time. We'll talk about that in another podcast. Winter.
The summer just wore me out. The summer hits.
But why? I
mean, there was a lot of music to listen to and not a lot of music that got me interested.
Uh-huh.
And I just started going back in time, like, what did I like that I just was like, oh, I love this. I forgot I love this. And God bless 92.3 in Los Angeles. I was driving home one night and I turned and they were playing this and I was like, God damn it, Debbie Deb. I miss, you know,
where you
were,
been?
Where you been? You were making $10 an hour. probably off of the hits that you made with that album. You probably shot up to like $20 an hour. Where are you today? I would love for somebody to call 1-800-POP-ROCKET and tell us. I couldn't find a Twitter account for her. She's not playing any local fairs. She deserves a career more than Iggy Azalea.
If Lifetime could do a Michelet movie, they should do a Debbie Dead movie.
I'm saying, okay?
Like, she's not at Quiet Canyon off the 60 freeway. You know what place I'm talking about,
located
right?
Located in Dublin, Montebello,
California.
Northern California, Dublin City, right off the side of the 16th Cinema. Listen, Debbie Deb was a fucking national treasure in San Francisco when I was in middle to high school. And I don't care. I'm not saying I danced to this song. I'm saying that when it came on, it was like one of those songs, if you ever do a biopic of my movie, this is me like talking to my first boyfriend, and this is like playing in the background when I tell him, like, give him like a red herring about my future. Like, I'm going to be a big star. This is it. Beat. She's letting you know. It's a funky little beat.
One day I have to like rank all my people who sound like, and it's going to be between her, Lisa, Pebbles, Jody Watley.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All who are like wonderful freestyle artists, right, from that period. Like, you know, like Lisa, they're definitely a Quiet Canon off the 63.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But
and to be clear, I did love the Michelet biopic on Lifetime, and which she was also in. She would wander through scenes and be like, this is when I knew I had to leave.
Ooh. That was a rough one.
Mine is from the exact same era, really. Okay, so important news. Cardi B with Bodak Yellow is now the number one song in America, beating Taylor Swift.
Amazing.
Okay,
apparently the first woman, the first solo rap artist since Lauryn Hill to have a
years
number
ago.
One song.
But is Lauryn Hill rap? We can have a discussion about this another time.
Right. No, but it's still crazy, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking of like, all right, who are like the hip-hop originator ladies who are important? We all know that Missy... Matters, Salt-N-Pepa, MC Light, all these people. I wish people did talk about Tina Marie a little more, the ivory queen of soul from the early Rick James pal, Lady T.
Mm-hmm. Loved a bear rug in front of a fireplace.
Nobody, I mean, like, in a she would have, yes, there's just nothing to say to that.
The picture is classy great. That way.
Yes. Irons in the fire, if you know what
exactly.
I mean.
Exactly.
It's really hard for me to even pick a favorite Tina Marie song. If you know the rap Missy Elliott does in 1-2 Step by Ciara, it's based off Tina Marie's rap, I'm 5'1", 100 pounds of fun, in Square Biz, famous song of hers.
Square Biz!
And here's my thing about that voice she does. I think Madonna ripped that off.
I do too.
Yeah, in her early recordings, it's like a straight up Tina Marie ripoff. Yeah, I'm a deep Madonna fan, we don't have to go down there.
Yeah,
but anyway, my favorite Tina Marie song is Behind the Groove.
Whatever,
slap at that.
Dancing
their
ass off to this.
No, you like fall out to this song.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a gay at my parents' church who every Christmas, you know, like people can sponsor poinsettias for the Christmas service, and he always dedicates one to Tina Marie.
Oh, I love him.
I'll get you his number.
Oh, my God.
I still think the history of music would have been completely different if Nana Cherry had never gotten Lyme disease.
Right.
Is that she is.
That's what happened. That's what I think she suffered early on.
Is that debilitating?
I mean, I think she's
that
okay.
You can't make
I think she's
cut?
Okay now, but she just didn't bounce back, unfortunately. And she was on a roll there.
Yeah, she had a cooking show in England for a split second, I believe.
I don't know, but I do know that the Jamie Oliver show that they do here, the 15-minute meals, which is a total lie, is wall-to-wall buffalo stance. Like, that's what the music is for that show. It's crazy. Wow.
Well, if there's a biopic, it better be called Raw Like Sushi, which is the best title of anything ever. Hey, guys, you've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Louis Vertel, with Winter Mitchell, Alonso Duralde, and Karen Tongson. Guys, I've had so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Miso. Thanks to him for letting us use it. And thanks to AK Cook VT for the 5-star review on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. Or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. We're a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are Casey O'Brien and Christian Duena.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.